Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the RHO Podcast. We got a good one for you this week. I know you guys are going to like it. It's a guy you've probably heard of. We just covered one of his articles on the Last Full Draw Friday. It's Steve Shirk. He was our first guest on the podcast. We talked a little bit about that. And now he's our most recent guest. I think you guys are going to enjoy the stuff that we got into. A lot of stuff, you know, around that article, a lot of stuff based on trail cameras. He runs a ton of trail cameras every year out there in the Big Woods public land in Pennsylvania. They have a lot of success out there every year. So the guy knows what he's talking about, and he's just a wealth of knowledge. And we even talked about this a little bit. He loves giving back and trying to help other people have success in the woods too. So we covered a lot of ground on this one. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. Before we get into it, don't forget about our partners, Racks Big Game Supplements. Give the deer what they need, how they want it, racksmineral.com. Check that out. Use the discount code. Don't remember it. I'll put it at the bottom in the description. Use that discount code and it'll get you 10 or 15% off. Then RG Outdoors and Midwest Farm and Land, both of those, Rodney Hawkins can get you taken care of. RG Outdoors is his company. It's a sporting goods store. He's got all kinds of good stuff for the outdoors. He's got like patio furniture, he's got electric bikes, he's got blinds and tree stands and cameras, all kinds of awesome stuff. So if you're local to us, go check him out in Flora, Illinois. It's RG Outdoors on Facebook. And then even if you're not local, if you're looking to buy some land or you have some land in Illinois you're trying to get sold, Midwest Farm and Land, you can call him up at 618-925-3153 and he'll get you taken care of on all of that. Without further ado, let's get into this conversation with Steve Shirk. If you guys remember, our first guest ever was the guy on the other side, well, on the other screen right now, Steve Shirk. Back, I think it was episode like 19 for us or something like that. We had you on as the first guest, and then a couple more times. I think the last time you were on maybe was episode 100, is about a year ago, if I'm thinking right. But yeah, we've been rolling since then, but we're glad to have you back on. Got a lot of experience with hunting big bucks in some of the, in my opinion, some of the toughest conditions as far as patterning bucks and getting on them, seeing deer and actually killing deer. And you've been really successful at it. So I think it's going to be a good conversation about kind of some of that stuff. But I, like I said, I wanted to start with some things out of an article that I covered on the last Full Draw Friday that we posted. It was, the title of it's Don't Miss Deer Days. There's a few things in there, and I think you started out with the 30-30 rut days.
Yep.
So where we're at, I would think, I even would go like, I think 35-45, just because of where we fall, I guess north and south probably. But those 30-30 rut days, like those are some of the best days that you'll have all season, right?
Absolutely. Especially when I talk 30-30 days, it's usually anywhere between October 15th and November 15th, kind of that 30-day rutting period. I know for some states, some areas, that mid-October, people might not consider that rut. Like, I will say here in Pennsylvania, if we get good weather in that mid-October period, those right temperatures, especially temperatures, you know, down near the freezing mark, it's not that our does are coming into heat that early, but our bucks are up and moving. They're working scrapes, you know, just out of that typical, you know, bed to feed pattern where he's in that bedding area most of the time during daytime hours. It completely breaks that movement pattern. Yeah, if we get any, especially as long as we get low temperatures, in at that freezing point or less, I mean, the movement's really, really good.
Yeah, we've seen that too, especially like even as early as the first week, end of the first week, October. If we get one of those days where it's like 32, 34 degrees, something like that, you'll see like little bucks, they'll start kind of fighting each other and they're just, they're feeling a little bit more frisky. Like you said, it's not that the does are coming in, but they're feeling themselves. They got, it's like a breath of fresh air for them when they got that big winter coat on and that cool air comes in and just promotes the movement that much more. And and on that, obviously during the rut, so like what you're talking about there, middle October to middle of November, I think those colder days, and you said in that piece that you see it, even if it's like that whole, let's just say that whole stretch was 30 degrees to four or in the 30s, right? You don't really see a big dip, even though the weather's kind of gone stagnant. As long as it stays cold, you're still seeing that movement.
That's exactly right. And what that's where some people, I will say, might either disagree or be a little bit surprised. They typically think like, you know, you need that front or that cold front coming in where you get the temperature change, you know, the temps dropping all of a sudden. But all I've seen in all my research, as long as we have the right temperatures, that's when we have good movement. Certainly, I will say, you know, sometimes you see a little better spark and movement when the front first rolls in or as that pressure is rising, you know, things like that. But overall, I mean, if we just have the right temperatures, it's going to be really good out there.
Yeah, that's something that I actually wanted to talk about too, was like, I think that front, whatever it is, cold front or change in temperature, like could be just a relative change. So like from 90 to 75, 75 mm-hmm. still pretty warm, but I feel like that drop, especially for us early October, you might see a spike in a little bit of movement, but it's not like what you're going to see in those 30 degree days. Right. So.
Oh, absolutely. And like another thing is even like when I'm guiding and, you know, I'll have clients, we'll be talking about, you know, what the weather's going to be like either before they're hunt or while they're here. And, you know, we might look and they'll say, oh, you know, it looks like lows, you know, maybe mid 40s. That should be pretty cool. You know, that's going to get deer moving. And I'll say, you know what, honestly, if it's not in the 30s or, you know, below freezing, especially, we typically don't see that good of movement. And there's times, honestly, where like last year we had a really bad day. I can't remember the date. I'd have to look in my data. But I remember the one day, and this was one of the worst days of the rut, where it was like high of 52 and low of 44. And you would think, you know, that's really not that bad. Like, that's pretty cool weather. And it was one of the worst days because I'm telling you, you have to be in those 30s, at least for the low. And the closer you get to that freezing mark or the less, I mean, or, you know, below it, it just gets better. It's just unbelievable how there's just that fine line between where it's got to be and, you know, and or you're not going to have the action that you're hoping for.
Right, exactly. And even during that rut time of year where you think they should be moving all over the place anyway, I think that's a big misconception a lot of times is, well, it's the rut, so they're going to be moving. Well, yeah, they're going to be doing their thing, but if it's, like you said, 52 degrees for the high during the day, they're going to be moving at night when it's a lot cooler, right? And they don't have the sun beating down on them. It's just like you take your biggest, warmest winter coat, put it on, and go outside. Okay, do you want to be running around when it's 50, or do you want it to be 35, right? And, you know, back to what you were saying there, a lot of guys will talk about, or maybe be surprised or disagree that like that stagnant weather would be good, even though it's cold. It just makes sense to me that that's how it would be, because they don't need it to warm up to like shock their system back into moving or whatever. I don't think it like lulls them to sleep that it's cold. I think it's just when it's cold, they're more comfortable. So then if it does warm up, you're going to see a dip in movement. And then maybe it seems like that helps things, because when it gets back cold again, you start to see them moving again. But yeah, I definitely do think there's a spike in movement if you have that kind of a drop in temperature. But whether that spike in movement is from seeing no deer to seeing two deer, or from seeing five deer to seeing 15, depends on where your temperatures actually fall.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like this past summer, and maybe getting a little bit off of your point, but something I wanted to bring up, this was just reminding me of deer this over the summer. And we had some really, really hot weather, like July through August, a lot of like 90 degree days. And it was funny, even like watching people, like you wouldn't see people outside hardly doing anything till like the last 2 hours of the day. And that's because the temperatures drop. And that's the only cool point of the day. And it just made me think, you know, deer are just like us. If the temperature, you know, if it's too warm, like, I mean, they're going to live their daily lives. But when it comes to like really, you know, moving a lot, being real active, rutting hard, that kind of stuff, you're not going to see as heavy of rutting activity unless you have the right temperatures. Now, I'm not going to say like, I also think like there's little pockets though on those hot days where, you know, maybe you have a hot doe and you kind of have some bucks bumping her around, but
yeah,
there's not as much of that long range movement where bucks are covering miles or really going long distances. I think a lot of bucks those days, they stay close to does. They probably bed downwind of does. Everything's more in a smaller window, smaller zone. And it's just hard because, you know, we're trying to capitalize, you know, on bucks in such big areas, big woods, where it's hard to always find that little zone, that little hot spot. And if they're not moving around from ridge to ridge here, you know, it's just makes it so much more challenging.
Yeah, you have to be so much more lucky if they're not moving very far, right? Like, it has to be that one hot doe. They're not just moving around because it's the time of year and the weather's right. So you're really shrinking your chances. Because there's bucks that are killed on 75-degree days in November every year, for sure.
Yep.
But those are way less than the number of bucks that are killed on a 35-degree day in November, no doubt. The other thing, one of the other things from the article, the barometric pressure. So I've always kind of thought of it, and this is more of, I guess, like a theoretical question, because it's, I don't know, there's some deer scientists could probably tell you a little bit more about this, but I like to get people's thoughts on it, because I've always thought of it as like the barometric pressure, kind of an indicator of what deer are going to be doing, maybe not the reason that they're doing what they're doing, because I don't know, and maybe they can because they're so in tune, but I don't know if they can like feel the change in pressure. But I'd be interested to see what you think. Do you think like when that barometer is rising, like they actually feel something different? Or do you think the barometer is rising, which means there's probably some kind of weather event going on, and the weather event's what is making them move more or less if it's dropping or whatever, and that barometer is just an indicator? Or do you think like that change in pressure, like they can almost sense that?
Well, I think they can totally sense it. And I think they can sense it sometimes literally just as it's starting. Even myself, like, I get sometimes like maybe a little bit crampy or my sinuses act up, you know, when the pressure's, you know, changing, a lot of fluctuations in weather. And I think like a wild animal, especially deer, like their senses are even better, especially because weather can also be a big threat to them at certain times of year, certain situations. Yeah. So their bodies are way more in tune to understand and read pressure, you know, because that's one of the telling signs of a big change in weather, and especially like a storm coming. So I don't know exactly why it seems like high pressure or rising pressure triggers movement versus, you know, low pressure, maybe because once again, that's the sign of maybe bad weather potentially. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, all I know is just paying attention to things like moon phase, temperature, barometric pressure. It's barometric pressure is probably, I would say, the number two factor when it comes to weather that I think influences movement.
Yeah. And then, like, no matter which side of that you fall on, I think you have to pay attention to it. Like, whether you think it's because they're feeling it or not. And, like, I'm just interested in that because I think they're so in tune with, they're out there every day. They're so in tune with the weather and the environment. Like, why wouldn't they be able to, right? But you have to pay attention to it no matter what you think about it, because it's pretty undeniable, especially you got guys like you talking about it who run so many cameras, like, and you see that movement, you have that data to back it up. Like, it just, it is what it is. It's not really, I don't think you can argue the fact that a rising pressure, the deer are going to be moving. I do think there's a point where it can get high enough that it maybe subdues a little bit of movement. I don't know if you've seen that or not.
Yeah. And sometimes I will say, despite temperature, when the pressure kind of levels out or gets to a certain point, I don't see it as effective where, like, you'll hear, you know, if the pressure's 29, whatever, you know, there should be great movement. But if it does seem like if it gets kind of stagnant, it doesn't seem like the movement stays with it versus temperature.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it might have something to do internally that imposing maybe a weather threat is coming. They need to feed, they need to move or seek cover. I think it's more related to that. And I will say, you know, what I really like to look for, especially, you know, if you're flexible, I know probably a lot of listeners aren't so flexible with their work, but, you know, even though I'm mostly someone that focuses around temperature, but if I see a day where I see prime temperatures, I see rising pressure, and then if it's near probably within 3-4 days of a full moon, like those days every year are just phenomenal. And sometimes you don't even get all that in one season. Like,
yeah,
just you have to have a little bit of luck the way that falls together. But if it does, like, those are probably going to be your best days. So even though, you know, I try to hit the temperature, you know, more than anything else, I'm still looking at all these other things. And sometimes that can be a deciding factor. Like, everything's lining up for this certain day to be tremendous. Like, mm-hmm. I have to get out there.
Yeah, exactly. And those are those days, especially like in October or December, where you're not just kind of relying on the rut. But like, when those days are coming, that's when you'll see your Instagram feed or whatever just lights up with a bunch of people killing bucks, right?
Exactly.
You mentioned another thing there I wanted to talk about, and this is the last thing from the article before we move on here, but the full moon, and especially, I think the article, I got it in front of me here, you talked about it in October, that October full moon, that's one also where, like, guys will almost fight you on what they think is better when it comes to the moon phase. And again, I have always kind of leaned more towards, I think the full moon is better because of just personal experience and trail cameras and stuff like that. Obviously not running as many as you are, but just the ones that I'm running, it seems like that's always been the case. So I'm interested too to hear that part of it, like full moon versus new moon. You're seeing a lot better movement during that October full moon.
Yep. And it just seems like that full moon usually hits somewhere in that mid to late October period. And that's just the time where bucks just need certain factors, like the right, if you have the right temperature, the right moon or rising pressure or all of the above, like that's the time of year where things can really explode when you have those certain, you know, scenarios. In my experience, why I think full moons are a factor is I actually see less night activity during a full moon. Some people I've heard say completely different, where they think more light at night makes more deer active. But I find that I think it makes them less active because deer are more comfortable in low light conditions. So I think when you throw in especially clear skies and a full moon or close to full moon, it just kind of shocks them. It messes especially with their feeding patterns. I find that you'll see more late morning feeding during a full moon, like 9 to 11 a.m. versus, you know, maybe 7 to 9 or some bucks or even in their bedding area sooner. But over the years, I've had many big deer on camera, like on an Oak Ridge during an October full moon at like 10:30 in the morning eating acorns. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just a telling sign that that buck probably didn't feed as heavily the night before, you know, a little insecure, and he's hungry. He's filling his belly up, you know, before he goes to bed a little later than usual. So that's been my experience. I see it on my trail cameras. We also do a fair amount of spotlighting. It seems like if we're spotlighting during a full moon, we see less deer. So I will also add to that, too, that I find less late afternoon activity, though, during a full moon. It seems like mornings are better during a full moon than the late afternoons. And I just think everything kind of gets pushed back because of that.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. It also seems like where the moon's at, as far as like, if it's overhead, if you got a full moon that's still hanging in the mornings and it's up over your head while you're hunting out there, like those seem to be, especially over food sources, those seems to be some of the best days that I've had. And it's almost like people forget that deer see way better than we do in low light. Yeah. So it's like, well, we can see better at a full moon, so the deer can, so why wouldn't they want to be out there? But then you also talk to predator hunters, like the coyote hunters around here especially, they'll say during a anytime a coyote can see a shadow, they have a lot less luck killing them at night. So I don't know if it's even something just like maybe across the board where there's just a lot less movement going on than you would think during that full moon at night. But like I've even heard guys talk about the deer don't like it because of predators. Well, I don't know that that's necessarily it, because the guys that hunt them all the time, like diehards, they don't like the full moon even for coyotes. But for some reason, I agree with you. It seems like during that full moon at night, I think it is a safety thing, like you said. They just would rather be not seen at all and have that advantage than everything be able to see them. The other thing, that was it from the article. One of the other things I wanted to kind of get into is we talked about trail cameras and you run a bunch of those. I get a lot of questions. So like whether we're doing food plots for guys or consults or whatever, they'll ask where we set up our trail cameras like this time of year. So like late summer, even go back to like early mid-August up until before that fall shift, right? Like you mentioned, you'd kind of like your season to open maybe a little bit earlier because it seems like guys have some success right now. So where are you setting your cameras, or which cameras are the hottest during kind of that phase for you, I guess?
Yeah, well, it does seem like and some of it's happening now, but it does seem like every year, you know, especially right around our archery season opens, it seems like a lot of our bucks quit showing up in food sources during daytime hours. Seems like right now you might have 2-3 weeks right now if it was, you know, acorns are just starting to drop, and it's like, man, and it can trick you too, because you're thinking, if I could only get out there right now, I could probably kill a good deer, you know, near an oak tree somewhere. And it's just amazing how it all of a sudden switches every year, you know, in that early October phase. So I guess it would depend on when I was planning to hunt, because if we're talking where I'm putting cameras and trying to kill a deer at that time, you know, for me, but the Pennsylvania season, I really struggle early in the season unless I'm either tight near a bedding area or right in the bedding area. And the best success hunting wise, the best success with daytime pictures on trail cameras have been tight to bedding. And I love to find scrapes near bedding too. I found that throughout the daytime, you know, sometimes we think that a bedding area is all about a buck just resting up and waiting to feed. Well, it's so far from that. Most of the bedding areas I know are full of food, especially browse. And I don't find that bucks are coming out of there most likely with an empty stomach and, you know, run into those acorns. I think they get out of that bedding area and they start wanting to socialize, especially if they're all alone. And that's why it seems like if you can set your cameras up on some scrapes near those bedding areas, those bucks tend to hit those scrapes before they head to that primary food source.
Yeah, that's interesting too, because I'll get your thoughts on this. The October lull, right? All the data shows that the deer will move more and more and more as the month of October progresses. Sure. But would you say that a lot of that movement, even though it's increasing, is still just around their bedding? Like maybe they're getting up out of their bed and moving more and then going back, but they're still not quite kind of moving as far? Or like what's been your experience as far as that goes, like with that mid-October kind of phase where guys aren't necessarily seeing as many bucks during the
day? Yeah, I mean, if we're not getting the right temperatures or the right weather, I don't see bucks moving far from those bedding areas during daytime hours. I do think, gradually as October progresses, you'll probably see bucks leave those bedding areas a little bit sooner. You know, they're getting a little bit more antsy, more concerned about other competitor bucks in the area. They're starting to wonder when that first doe is going to come into heat. So, you know, you'll have some bucks, instead of them leaving the bedding area literally maybe even after dark, they'll start, you know, by mid-October, they'll start coming out a little bit sooner, maybe sometimes an hour or two before dark, or going in a little later, you know, during daytime hours. But I will also say, once again, if we get a good cold front or the right temperatures, even in early October, that pattern will change. You will find bucks breaking out of that pattern, and it completely changes the game plan, you know, for me and I'm sure other hunters as well. So It's so weather based that time of year too, and really all times of year. But it's just amazing how, I feel like a lot of these bucks, they want to get out and, start working rub lines and working scrapes, but their bodies are telling them that you need to keep putting on those fat reserves. You need to basically put the feed bag on more than anything else until your body's ready to really start covering ground. So
yeah,
I would once again have to agree that it's most likely a gradual step-by-step process as that movement starts to progress.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing that those cameras on scrapes and those setups like throughout the year from January to December, like are those kind of your best places for pictures or daytime pictures pretty much throughout the year, like certain scrapes that are just active all year? Are you seeing those as like your best spots to have a camera or potentially a setup?
I would say those are the best spots to potentially kill a mature deer, mm-hmm. and maybe the best setup as well, as like it's a safe setup because you're close to bedding, but you're not in bedding. And if you have the wind right, it can be a deadly setup. All you need them to do there is show up at, at the right place, the right time. So but what I do find is I don't always get a lot of other deer on those cameras. And that's where maybe some people can be a little bit concerned. Like, I didn't get many pictures, but then you got to look back and think, yeah, but how many mature deer did you get in daytime hours? Mm-hmm. It's a spot where you're going to sit there and you're probably not going to see anything most of the time. But when you do see a deer, it's going to be a good one, you know? So it plays a little bit of a mind game. And especially when I've, guided people and put clients in those types of setups, it's hard. I don't care who it is. Most hunters, they just want to see deer. If they're not seeing deer, they're impatient. They're mm-hmm. not having as much fun. But like, that's the difference between a lot of like your more serious mature buck hunters versus just deer hunters. Like a real true mature buck hunter, the only thing he cares to see all season is that one time, that one opportunity at a good buck. That's all he's hoping for. And I think that's the mindset you have to have.
Yeah. It's all about your goals, right? Like you said, if you're out there and you want to kill a mature buck, then most of the time those setups are going to be ones where you end up seeing less deer. If you're a guy that needs to see deer, like even out where we're at in the Midwest, like I could put you on a field and you could see a bunch of deer pretty much every night on the right field. But number one, a lot of those aren't going to be mature bucks in the daytime unless it's just you get lucky during the rut or like one of those late winter storms, right? Then he's probably going to be out there if it's one of the last remaining food sources. However, you're going to see a lot of deer, right? Just probably not that one. And then once you're on that big food source, like you have to be just dumb lucky a lot of times to be where they're coming out or where they're going back in and get them within bow range. If you're after that mature buck, though, those sits a lot of times are going to be, seems like, where you're not seeing a lot of other deer because as their testosterone goes up and those big bucks, they don't necessarily want to be around a bunch of other deer all the time, right?
Yep, exactly. No, they tend to be, individual solo animals. Now, once again, it just depends on the time of the year. A summertime buck is completely different than a fall time buck.
Oh, yeah, different animal.
Yep. I will say I see some of them group up back together in the late season. Mm-hmm. Not all of them, though. I think to some bucks at a certain age, whether they've had some bad experiences or some close calls, that they're like, you know what, I'm way better on my own.
Yeah.
I do my own thing. If I got a buddy, I'm going to wind up getting shot or getting attacked by a pack of coyotes or something. So, yeah. But they definitely, and not only do they, a lot of them tend to be, solo animals, but they're completely different than all those other deer that you're seeing in that field. Like they're way, way more cautious. I think they think a lot harder about surviving and how they're going to access a field or a food source more than your younger deer or even mm-hmm. does. Like the mindset of a mature buck, I mean, most of the time is how do I survive not just today, but every step he takes, I think sometimes he's thinking, is this the right way to go? Like, it's just amazing how smart they are.
Yeah, and it, like, time means nothing to them. So they can stand and look at their next, literally their next step for however long they want to. If they don't feel something's right, then they just turn around and go the other way. Like, we've all seen that. Something that I think's interesting up here at the shop, processing a lot of deer, it's amazing the amount of mature bucks that at some point or other have been shot other than the time that killed them, right?
Sure.
So I think that's why, to make it to four or five, like, they've had so many experiences, that's why they get so smart, basically. And they've had all these bad experiences or things that went wrong, and they just happened to survive, whereas the three-year-olds died, whatever. But now they've made it to four or five, they've had all these experiences, so they are smarter from going through it. But you guys obviously kill a lot of deer. You run your guide service. You've killed several mature bucks, of course. What do you guys see out there? Because I know in PA, there's a lot of hunter density too. So, like, do you see a lot of bucks with old scars from being shot when you process them?
A decent amount. I wouldn't say, like, I would nowhere near say, like, the majority of bucks, you know, we shoot or whatever, you know, have some type of arrow wound. But, I mean, there's been a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I do think, though, most of your mature bucks here have probably been shot at or at one time had some pretty darn close calls.
Yeah, right.
And enough to where it probably near traumatized them and completely changed the way that, you know, that they think throughout their everyday life. So, and I think when you throw more hunters in the woods and, you know, it's public land, I also think the learning curve is a lot shorter for deer in some of these places. Like,
yep,
they get smart pretty quick. And also, I've said this many times too, that I think some of these public land deer, it's in their genetic code that, like, they're absolutely paranoid of humans and hunters, and you know, they're a completely different animal in that sense. So it is definitely something, you know, if you're not familiar with this type hunting, this in type of environment, you really have to know that, because it's something that a hunter always has to be aware of and thinking about.
Yeah, I think that's definitely learned, especially when they're, like you said, public land, they've been hunted so much. Once they're a fawn, they're those groups that they're with, they see a human, they just instantly take off. Like, of course, they're going to pick that up sooner than later. But here where we're at, and it's probably a different in, like, difference in terrain, because you can see so much more, I would assume, where we're at, and there's a lot less places for the bucks to go to hide. But, like, I would say upwards of 70% of the bucks that we see, if they're over four, they've been shot before, whether that's like a 22 or a 223 or an arrow or a slug gun or something, like broadhead buried in the backbone, buried in its shoulder blade, just something where he had a really bad day and got through it before he had the eventual bad day. But it's pretty crazy. But it makes sense, I guess, out there where you're at, because that, like, it's so vast out there, right? Like, they have so many places to go hide, which is why you have to be so in tune with, like, this weather stuff and everything like that to even find them, let alone get on them and kill them.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, you could put it this way, is it, and nothing against, you know, different places throughout the country where people hunt, but, like, I would say this would be like catching fish in a big lake versus fish in a little pond.
Yes.
There's still some challenge either way, but, like, these deer, and once they get bumped, a lot of times they can just go off and they're not going to run into anyone else, or there are a few experiences in a certain area, you know, it's getting pressure, that deer can go somewhere else and find where there's no pressure and stay there. So that's just given the amount of land that they have to do that.
Yep. I think we probably said this in past conversations, but I do, like, I know guys out here where we hunt that will kill nice bucks, if not every year, like every other year, right? If you take them and put them out there where you're at, they're going to have a tough time. If you take the guy out where you're at that's having, you know, that's killing a mature buck every 3 years, let's say, and put him out here, he's probably going to have a lot better time than the flip side. And I make no bones about that. I think it's so much more difficult what you guys are doing to get on them and consistently kill them than what we're doing, where it's a lot of fence rows, it's a lot of ag fields, and than if you have the opportunity, ability to put in food plots and stuff like that. However, there are pieces like south of us is the Shawnee National Forest. And I know a lot of guys that listen hunt down in there, and they would be a lot similar to what you guys are doing out there. It's a lot of big timber, rolling hills and stuff like that, and some pretty good terrain, really. And like Illinois specifically is such a north and south state, like there's so much difference between the whole state, so there's a lot of different types of hunting you could get into. And all that stuff down there, like at Shawnee's public land, too. So it reminds me, just from conversations with you, a lot about what you guys are doing. So you could probably take one of those public land guys and send them out there, and they would do okay. But I'm sure you see that kind of stuff with having the guide service. You get guys in from different places, and they have kind of maybe a different expectation or like a totally different experience going out there than wherever they're from.
Yep. I mean, I'll be honest. I mostly target hunters that have experience in big woods in this type of environment. Just because, and once again, I'm not even going to say – go down the route saying it's easier, but it's definitely way different.
I'll say it's easier.
But it's definitely like not only learning on how to have success and learning how the deer live here and how they move and where they feed and bed, but like the environment, the mountains, the ruggedness, the nasty cover in places. It's just, there's so many different things that beat up on you both mentally and physically. And even like another thing here is like, there's no ATV access, like everything you got to walk to.
Yep.
And a lot of the really good spots sometimes can be, well over 2 miles back in. You might hike over two mountains just till you get to your stand location. So it just, it can wear on you in so many different ways. And it really sets it up to where the deer do have an advantage here. And that's probably why we have a lot of big deer here, because maybe they don't have the best nutrition, but if deer can get old, they can still usually grow a pretty good set of antlers. Maybe not like what they're doing in Illinois or Iowa, but like, we still have a lot of upper age class bucks, which it's still is something to be very, very fortunate about.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that would be one of the benefits of having that difficulty in finding them, obviously, is there's more places for them to hide, more chance for them to get to that mature age. And I will say, I wouldn't say it's easy where we're at either, but I will say it's easier. And the other flip side of that is we get a lot of guys that come up from down south and hunt in our area because it's over the counter. It's fairly close still to like, Georgia, Louisiana, Alabama, those guys where they don't have a lot of big deer. And talking to them, like they'll say, man, you guys got 140 inch bucks around every tree. Like, well, not really, but like we have a good number of them for sure. It's not like some people make it out to be, but it's definitely not near what you guys are dealing with out there as far as just the difficulty of it. But I want to get back to the trail camera thing just a little bit, and more so like what you do with the pictures when you get them. So like, what does your laptop or your computer look like with all your trail camera data on it? Are you super crazy about having all that stuff sorted out, or is it kind of here, there, and everywhere? Like, what's that look like for you as far as analyzing that data from all those pictures that you get?
Yeah, well, last year I just changed it up because, while I'm guiding, some people don't really understand or even know my process, but like, I have multiple people here at once, so I'm not sitting in a tree with another client. I'm really not doing them any good anyway, especially another bow hunter. There's really no need for me to just be sitting with someone all day. So all I'm doing all day is scouting. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, what can I do for this guy tomorrow and the next day? And then I got this other group of guys coming in a few days. So I'm always thinking ahead. And so I'm checking cameras every day. I mean, there's been days I've checked 40, 50 cameras. And what I did last year, I did it differently, but I liked it better because I used to do it the end of the year. That's when I'd collect all the data, leave everything on the cards. And it really is just, it was kind of overwhelming, even though in the wintertime I had the time to do it. But I found last year, if I collected the data every day and put it in my spreadsheet, it didn't feel like as much of a, because before, honestly, it felt like a job. It just felt overwhelming. Thinking the end of the season, even though it, don't get me wrong, it's fun, But like, man, I've got 180 or whatever SD cards now to, I gotta go pull all these cards and all these cameras and all these places this winter, and then bring them, bring all that information back and compile it in. So, I said, you know what? This, as I'm out there checking these cameras every day, I'm just gonna note down the data. I just saved all the pictures in my phone, and then each evening, honestly, maybe a half hour every night, I would just throw it all in my spreadsheet, and I really enjoyed it. Plus, I was able to watch as the season progressed, already like, oh wow, I can see why that day was good, or it was really fun to like it was. I was shocked, especially our best dates last year were the October 15th and 17th, which that's we've never had it that early be so good.
Really?
And like it was amazing because pretty off or pretty early right into the season, I'm like, wow, that movement seems tremendous. And I kept thinking, I don't know if we're ever gonna the rest of the season see that kind of movement again. And sure enough, we didn't. So it
Yeah.
was just fun to watch as the season went on to see how, how the movement and the data was pouring in. So
Yeah, I will with the between me and the team of guys. Just kind of based on what they've sent me, or like I'll ask them, and then I'll go through my own cameras, and I try to at least save the racked bucks, right? And if maybe if I have a food plot full of does, like I'll save that one, right? Instead of the 50 pictures or whatever I got from that night, but I'll do that, and then like doing taxidermy on all the paperwork, guys have to write down the date that they killed the buck. So like for our local area, I can get a really good idea based
oh, yeah.
around the cameras, and then because I'll look at it and I say, okay, these look like they should have been probably pretty good days based on my camera. And then I'll go look at like when on were all these bucks killed. Because usually guys that are having deer mounted, they're pretty good bucks, right? Not
Yeah.
all of them, but most the majority of them. So it's interesting. Not only can I see kind of like when the most movement was, but then I can compare it with, okay, were there a lot of mature bucks potentially killed that day? And it's interesting how often those two will line up. And sometimes, like what you're saying, and I take out gun season because there's just so many more people hunting. So like
Sure.
I'll take those days out. But like during the bow season, like it's interesting to see which days those are because again, sometimes it'll be like, man, I don't remember October 30th or October 24th being like the day. But based off of my data, like that's what it says. And then most of the time for us though, and it has to do some with the number of guys that are out, but it seems like right around Veterans Day for us is always really, really good as far as mature buck movement goes. And obviously, rut has a lot to do with that. And then the weather, of course, if we get one of those, I'm sure that 15th and 17th were probably a couple of those days where everything that, like that back to the article, everything was just kind of lining up.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, no, and that's I've been doing this so long, like I still really enjoy doing it, but I see the same results as far as not so much the same dates. That's what's almost the fun part is it's almost different every year,
Yeah.
but it's the same science to it, like right temperatures, right time of year, once again moon and barometric pressure. So it's just that's been very, reliable for me every year. But I will say, I guess the reason why I'm so fascinated about it would be like, no matter what, even though I say there's a lot of consistency, you still learn so much from collecting this data that like, I also feel like it would make anyone a better hunter. And especially when it comes to deer movement, daytime movement, and that kind of stuff, like really honing in on that information and collecting it, you'll understand so much more about deer. Like, there's probably no better way to do it. I mean, I feel like in one season of doing this with all these trail cameras would probably teach me what another hunter would learn by himself in a lifetime of just sitting out there and observing. Like, it
Yeah.
really speeds up that learning curve.
Oh, absolutely. You have so many more eyes out there
Yep.
that's taking in all that data, and then it, like you said, you have to sit out there how many times to collect the data that you can on 180 cameras. I mean, that's pretty
Yeah.
crazy. One thing I also wanted to talk about with you because, like I said, we had you way back 2 or 3 years ago now, I guess. And at that time, I think the Whitetail Cribs episode was probably out. that you did, because that was 4 or 5 years ago, maybe.
Oh, I'd say at least, yeah.
Yeah. So you had some, I mean, you were definitely known in the hunting space then, but I feel like the last 2 years, like, I see Steve Shirk way more than I did before that. What's that kind of been like for you, and what do you think you attribute that to? And then third part of this long-winded question is, has that changed, like, your guide service and all that? Like, have you got a lot more phone calls and a lot busier as kind of you've become more, I don't know, become more public-facing, but definitely more well-known, I think?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I've become more well-known. And I think the only reason why I've become more well-known is, like, I feel like, you know, if you're passionate about something, and you do decent at it, that, like, nothing against, you know, people hunting for themselves. And I'm not saying everyone should be a hunting guy, but, like, I feel like every hunter in some way, if you're passionate about it and you've learned how to do it and how to have success that in some sort of way, you should give back or, like, serve others in some kind of way. And like with me, like, I enjoy, like, guiding people. I enjoy writing articles. I enjoy chatting with you and people like you and podcasts and those kind of things. Like, I feel like I can, deep down, I feel better about myself when it's not all just about me. And I think a lot of people, and once again, I'm not patting myself on the back, but I think there's been a lot of people that do podcasts and things that have noticed that. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, this guy's willing to talk to just about anyone. I mean, honestly, I hardly refuse any time or any podcast or interviews. So, and I just think it's kind of had, like, a domino effect. And then the more people you talk to and the more it spreads, I mean, you just become more well-known. And also, I think that I might be a little more unique where, like, you know, Pennsylvania is not known for as many big deer, like maybe states out in the Midwest. Yeah. And public land. And there's, I think it's getting better, but there for quite a while, there was not a lot of information on this part of the country where I'm from, hunting and the mountains and public land, big woods. Like, I think there's been a big need for hunters to come out and share some of their experience and tactics and that stuff. So all that combination of stuff. And yeah, overall, it definitely has helped my business. And I think that's just the effect of it is, like, you know, in some way, if you're sharing with others, most of the time it will come back and benefit you in a certain way too. So it's definitely had that effect. But I mean, I'm not really expanding my business a whole lot. The only thing we're doing now is we've built our own cabin. Before, we used to rent cabins, and even the camp that was in Whitetail Cribs is just my family deer camp. Mm-hmm. So, like, I was very limited using that because there's a lot of times a year that my dad or other families using it. So I needed a place of my own that, like, whenever I have people that want to come and hunt, you know, I now got that. So I have, we're going to be expanding where we're not just doing rut hunts and going to do turkey hunts and, you know, stuff like that now, cause I have my own place. And yeah, all in all, I do think it's probably benefited from some of my name and reputation growing. So just certainly blessed in a lot of ways from that.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. I love to see it for you because you're for sure one of the good dudes out there, I think. And that, just what you're talking about, it speaks to it. You're willing to still do, like, somebody asked and, like, I see you on a podcast that, like ours, and on episode 19, when we don't have that many followers, that many people listening, it's like a guy that's willing to do that. And then as your popularity grows, still willing to do that kind of stuff. You don't see that all the time. So, like, I really appreciate that. And that's why I'm happy to see, like, all the success that you've got going on. It's really cool. And appreciate you coming back on with us and talking a little bit of hunting stuff. And I'm sure we'll probably do it again one of these days. But maybe I won't bother you for another year or so. And that way you can come up with some more stuff.
Yeah, no, I always enjoy. I've talked, you know, we've had several opportunities and, you know, you're one of those people that I certainly remember, and I doubt it'll ever be, except, you know, there's times during hunting season I have to turn down podcasts, but other than you've noticed. I'll be looking forward to the next time. Yep. and we'll be appreciating you reaching out to me to do that. So thank you very much.
For sure, man. Hey, there's times during hunting season I have to turn down podcasts. That's what I do. So I get that. Sure. All right, man. Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time, too much more here. I'll let you get off of here and get to doing prepping for the season or whatever you got going on. So again, thanks for coming on, and always love the articles. I'm sure we'll cover some more of them. Keep them coming out, and good luck this year.
Hey, same to you. God bless you and have a safe and successful season.